It's time for your weekly dose of Wayne's Comics.
Welcome to episode 495 of the Wayne's Comics Podcast. Thanks so much for listening. This week, it's another great Kickstarter doubleheader, and it all kicks off with Michael K. Easton from SoPro Comics for Insecticid number 1. And it's described this way: can Ronald P. Tramp, Hakim's coffee-loving customer, help him discover his powers in time to stop the reptilians? We talk about how the book came to be, about his love of insecta things, and what we can expect from him in the near future. You can find him on Kickstarter under Insecticid, that's all one word, number 1. Then everything wraps up with my fun discussion with John Durgan and Joel Van Patten from Livid Comics. Their book right now going on is called Yule, and that's spelled J-O with double dots above it and L, but it's pronounced Yule. And appropriately enough, it's a fantasy thriller comic about the holidays, about Christmas. Their campaign ends on Wednesday, July 21st at 10 a.m. Eastern Daylight Time. It's described this way: what if the most wonderful time of the year lasted an eternity? As a child, did you ever wish you could go to the North Pole and meet Santa and see his workshop? 8-year-old Will Sheldon is about to have that wish come true. Kind of. We talk about how the book came to be, about the holidays and horror in the holidays, as well as what the future holds for Livid Comics. So I'm sure you're going to enjoy what they have to say. There's a lot to get to in this episode, so let's get on with the show. It's great to welcome to the podcast Michael K. Easton from Insecticid, which is right now going on Kickstarter. And I get a kick, Michael. Your description on the project is, says Michael K. Easton is known as the illustrious one, and he's the chief creative officer of SoPro Comics. His talents can be felt across many titles within the SoPro Comics line. You're the artist on Heroic 9.0, the artist writer on The Impossible Family, and artist writer on Insecticid, which we're talking about. On the off chance he isn't working on comics, he's either designing graphics or spending time with his family, which probably isn't much when you consider all that other good stuff. So how you doing, Michael?
I'm doing really well. I try to squeeze as much as I can out of the hours that I'm awake.
Yeah, I can relate to that. I understand that really well, because I do this podcast. I have another podcast that I do. I do a video review thing that I do twice a month. Then I've got other things that I do for people. Everybody's always got something for me to do, so I never have to worry about being bored with those things. So, Insecticid, I was looking at the video on the Kickstarter page, and you had a little thing that says putting the fun back in the funny books, which, of course, I liked. And I got a chance to read, you made Insecticid number 1 available to me, which I read and enjoyed. And I'm just kind of putting the fun back in funny books, because, you know, there's some fans of comics that if you say that will get mightily unhappy.
You're correct. It's actually my cohort in crime, Jordan Lowe. He's a writer on a few books. He's actually the letter of Insecticid. He actually came up with that tagline because when we first started out creating comics together, we got really super serious about it and weren't having fun. So that was kind of, even the tagline of SoPro Comics is kind of a joke in itself of, we're joking around, we're having fun. Oh, look at us, we're so pro. So that also goes in tagline of putting the fun back into funny books of, comics should be fun. They should be entertainment. Mm-hmm. And we shouldn't take ourselves so serious in what we're doing in the first place. Mm-hmm. So we should make sure that, first of all, we're having fun, because if we're not having fun, why are we doing it?
Mm-hmm. Believe me, I enjoy that thing. I think that having fun and adventure and buckle that swash and all that good stuff to me is very important in comics. But I'm always reminded of Star Trek The Next Generation when they decided, they sent this edict down, no comedy, no fun. This is serious science fiction. We don't do that. And I'm always kind of like, I think Next Generation suffered as a result of that. Even, you know, Classic Trek had lots of comedic episodes that were lots of fun. So I don't understand why they did that, but that's that.
Yeah, I actually agree with that, because with the Next Generation, it did kind of come off slightly dry. Like, I mean, I'm still a fan of it, but I completely understand what you're saying about that.
Yeah, slightly, okay.
I would try to be nice.
I would say more than that, but that's just me. Okay, let me read a little bit about the Insecticid. It says, our lead character, Hakeem Hudson, thought he was just an ordinary human living in a boring little town in Ohio, aren't they all? Working at a coffee house, he has seen a delightful assortment of customers and characters, but one fateful night proves that he has no clue what he is or what in the insta-heck is going on. I think that's kind of fun. And you are the writer and the artist of this book, right?
That's correct.
Wow, that's really good. And you said that your cohort is the letterer?
Yeah, Jordan Lowe. Him and I are like co-partners in the Super Comics. He has another book that we work on. It's called Bluff Creek about Bigfoot. So we're just kind of all over the place.
Mm-hmm. Cool. I have to say it interests me because you're located in a state where I don't know many comics.
Oh, really?
Organizations. Yeah. But I have to say that I moved to Florida and I discovered all these comic companies down here in Florida, which surprised me. You know, are there a lot of comic companies up at where you are?
Yeah, it's kind of weird because that was the same thing. Like when we first started out, we thought we were the only ones. And then we started looking deeper and there's quite a few artists in this area. Like we're kind of in the Merida, Ohio area. And there is a lot of artists that are, it might not necessarily be comic related, but there's a nice crowd of artists that are working on something or another.
Well, that's cool because I've been to Ohio and seen Space, the Space Convention.
Mm-hmm.
I forget what that stands for, but I was surprised when I went to there how many things were up there. I mean, you've got like, I can't even remember the names of them all. Ted, who has that, all of his good books, Apama, all his books. What's Ted's last name? I'm going to kick myself for not remembering. He's got a Kickstarter going on right now himself. And I suppose I shouldn't be giving him credit. We should be talking about your stuff.
But that's okay. The more the merrier, I always say.
I'm interested that, you know, there are all these comic people. There seems to be clusters around. You know, I talked with somebody from New England. They said they struggled to find other people interested in making comics. I kind of figure that's because they're up near Boston and in New York, and they probably figure any comic book creators probably go there to get things done. But like Florida down here, there's bunches of companies. I was surprised how many there were. And, you know, of course, California, there's a lot. And I think there's Texas has a bunch. I was to a con in Texas and was surprised how many were there. So
I would say to date in this area, our most famous artist is probably James Patrick of Kaiju Score. And he's written for DC. I think he's done some DC work here and there. Mm-hmm. But right now, I think, is it Aftershock it's coming out of that? It seems to be getting a lot of hype.
Mm-hmm. Well, cool. That's great. Now, I find it interesting that Hakeem, the main character, he works at a place called Leapin' Lizard Coffee.
Yes. It's weird because I've never worked in a coffee house, but my wife and I love coffee a little too much. And like, even we have like a different scents in our house that are coffee related. And I just always, I was trying to come up with a place for the character to exist in, and that it just kind of kept navigating to this coffee house that it just seemed like it was the right fit for that type of area.
Well, I also get a kick. It says that you have a love of crazy conspiracy theories and superheroes.
That is absolutely correct. I am kind of Unfortunately, there's a little too many political type conspiracy theories that I'm not into. I'm into more of the old school conspiracy theories like Hidden Earth, of course, reptilians that may appear in this book. All those kind of sci-fi that there's always seems to be a shred of truth related to it.
That's the way they do things. They make it just enough so that you can say, well, that's true. I guess everything else must be true. That's what they do. Now, I've got to read something because I have a question about this description. It says, can Ronald P. Tramp, Hakeem's coffee-loving customer, help him discover his powers in time to stop the reptilians? Ronald P. Tramp. That wouldn't be an allusion to some former president, would it?
It actually possibly started out on another podcast as a slight dig towards
that person,
former president.
Okay.
And then he kind of morphed on into a whole new character of it actually was kind of a joke. We were having a podcast. My brother-in-law that's on it, he was going out of town to like a gaming convention. And so we were just joking around. I was like, oh, well, I can do this character. And then the next thing you know, we had like 45 minutes of me and Ronald talking back and forth like we were two separate people.
Okay. Now, before we get too much farther, I always get yelled at because I don't do the Kickstarter information soon enough for some people. So Insecticid number one is the name of the project. If you get the goal, your goal, according to this, is $2,800.
Correct.
And you have to get the goal by Monday, July 19 at 7:33 a.m. Eastern Daylight Time. And you're pretty far along as far as that goes, but we still need some more backers for this to get together. So if you haven't gone, look for Insecticid, and that's all one word, number one. Look for that and be able to, you know, you can join there and be a backer. You've got 30 plus backers while we're talking, so that's a good place to be. And is this your first Kickstarter?
This is actually my second one. We did one for the Impossible Family number two. I never do anything the correct way. So our first Kickstarter was actually an issue two. I would say I cut my teeth and learned a lot of what to do and what not to do with that one. So first of all, we made sure this book was completely done and ready to go to press before we even looked at Kickstarter.
Good. Well, that's a great thing because I know I could sit here and list off all the Kickstarters that I backed that I have never seen a single page from. So I'm glad that you're doing that because that's real important for Kickstarters because Kickstarter won't let you do another project until you fulfill the one that you're doing at the moment. So
yeah, you're ahead. That's something we learned on the first one. I thought I would be able to turn everything around quickly enough. And then actually, I believe the rewards were like maybe 6 months further than what I had originally expected. But I did make sure to like keep everyone involved, like let them know what was going on and made sure everyone did get the reward. So, and again, that's why like I went back, like I got everything lined up. For this one, we've got proofs of everything that we're doing, so so we're just waiting for the deadline to push send.
That's right, when that comes. And of course, you know, with Kickstarter, if there's any delay, somebody, let's say they use a certain credit card and then they forget and they charge too much on their credit card and it's not available, there's still some time, like 2 weeks I think it is, after the thing.
It's 6 days.
6 days. Okay. So I have never run a Kickstarter. I've been involved with Kickstarters, but I've never run one. So that's good to know because that's real important. So any of your backers right now, they want to make sure that their card is charged appropriately to make sure.
Yeah, I've run into that myself because I've backed quite a few different Kickstarters. I'm more into like the superhero genre, so I kind of stick to that flavor, but I've had a bad habit of not realizing what credit card I might have on file. But like you said, it alerts you and lets you switch it over. And you know, six days is plenty of time to get it corrected.
Yeah. Usually another payday will come around. in there somewhere, so that'll help you do it. So now I gotta ask you, because Hakeem Hudson, doesn't he has the same name as the town, right?
Yes, that's an interesting thing. He unfortunately had some issues where he grew up, and his parents kind of sent him off to this little town, and it just happened to be one of those strange coincidences where his last name is the same name as the town. Mm. Now, that might be something we have to touch about later down in another issue without giving too much away.
Okay. Well, that'd be good to know. I like little clues like that. I like something that we come back later, you know, the foreshadowing, as they like to call it. I like those things. Now, let me read it. Well, let's talk a little bit. You can see if you go to the project on Kickstarter, you see the first several pages on there. And you notice that some of this guy's customers act a little differently.
Yeah, you kind of get like it's funny. Anyone that works in like a retail or any type of restaurant, they always have those wide variety of characters, and some of them just always seem slightly off kilter, where you're just kind of wondering, what is that person's backstory? And so we touch base on the characters that he has to deal with every day, and some of them might just not be human.
Yeah. Well, let me read the paragraph. There's another paragraph on here that I think they'll clear a couple things up. It says, the reptilians are here, whether he likes it or not. They could be his neighbor, his boss, or even his loved one. They are on a mission to make the human race extinct by any means necessary. By day, Hakeem Hudson is a 17-year-old barista for Leap and Lizard Coffee, as we mentioned. But after tonight, he doesn't know what he is. Man, creature, hero, or something brand new. So that's a good description for it. And I like the pages, too. I'm glad you put the pages in there. And there's a character model sheet for Insecticid as well. I like that. So really good stuff.
Yeah, it was really fun creating the character on the color scheme, because my wife is actually the colorist for the book, which that's always been a lifelong dream of mine of like, oh, it'd be so great to like, you know, have your significant other working on comics with you. So. And it's kind of funny, cause I just kind of sat her down and said, hey, how about you try coloring this? And next thing you know, it just kind of took off. But, on a funny note, we were looking for color schemes for Insecticid, and I wanted to do something, unique and original. And because I was doing all this research on insects, and a lot of people don't realize how colorful insects are. Unfortunately, I've learned way too much information about insects, but oddly enough, the color scheme we picked was from the football team, the Miami Dolphins of all.
Speaking of insects, that's funny. When I looked at the color scheme, I remember thinking, gee, that just looks like the Dolphins. I wonder why they picked that color. So that's interesting, because, you know, I used to do a newsletter where I changed the color scheme from month to month, and I used to save examples of color schemes so I could do that. And, you know, I would see ads and I'd see like a certain blue and a certain yellow would go well together. And I'd say, okay, I'll do that next month. So I do that all the time. So I'm always interested in color schemes. So that's cool. That's where that came from. That's neat. I like that. So that's good. Now, you designed the costume?
Yes.
Okay. All right. I have to ask you, because Hakeem is, shall we say, a diverse character.
Yes.
And I'm interested in that because in Ohio, I'm not sure it's small town Ohio. Of course, I don't live there, so I really can't answer that. But I'm curious, are there in small town Ohio, are there a lot of is there a lot of diversity in those towns?
I can't say that there's a huge amount. I would say there is a fair amount. Actually, this character, Hakeem, I based on an intern that I had named Corbin. And he's this kid that I've known. I've watched him grow up. Mm. He's always come around like picking up comics that I've created. And now that he's an adult and I've seen him like grow up, I was like, you know, I just had to create this character based off of him. Mm.
So I always ask that of artists, where did the character's appearance come from? because I think that's important. Some people drop from real life. Some people don't. Some people, it's completely their imagination. I always tell about the fact that David Peterson from Mouse Guard, I went and asked him, where did you get the characters from in the Mouse Guard? I thought it was like King Arthur's Round Table or something. And it turns out they were his friends. He wanted characters he could write and come up with, and he knew his friends best. So he said, I just made them into the mouse characters.
Oh, and that's what they always say, like, write what you know. So everything that I've ever, no matter how crazy it might sound, there's a shred of truth in everything that I've created. I've used comics to work through personal problems, through mental health issues, while having fun. I've always kind of like, it's funny that talking about who you base characters on is the Impossible Family, another book that I do. It was actually based on my wife and her extended family. And then I kind of found that there's not, since people know that they're based on characters, like they don't necessarily, you can't do a whole lot with them. So I kind of pigeonholed myself into that, where I was like, let's try something new where I can actually do different things with characters and no one gets mad.
See, now I have to tell you, I have a friend of mine who wrote a friend of his into a comic book, and he didn't tell him, but he died at the end of the issue. And of course he gives the book to the guy and he's reading. He says, "Hey, wait a second, you killed me."
Exactly.
He goes,
I was like, I don't need a relative coming to me going, why did you kill me off in this issue? And what does this mean?
You don't like me very much, do you? Kind of a response.
So like, no, they're characters based off you. This isn't you.
That's right. That's right. Well, this guy was so mad that he got killed.
Yeah. But no, that's like with Hakeem, like, you know, the character that, or the person that I based Hakeem off of, he's a really good kid. Well, I mean, he's an adult, but to me, he's always a kid. And I just like, I like his positive outlook on things. And I was like, in this character, I just wanted to do something unique. And with Insect the Kid, I can't think of anything more unique than this character that has insect powers.
Mm-hmm. Very good. Now, I have, before we get too much far in other things, I've got to ask you something. The video that you did, we talked about Ronald P. Tramp, and in part of the video, I think that's you portraying Ronald P. Tramp there. I found that interesting.
Would you like to meet Ronald P. Tramp?
Okay.
Well, man, I really appreciate you, man. Mr. Wayne, I'm really I'm glad Michael could bring me on here to say hello to you, man. I was the one that was in the beginning of that video, man. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, you're the coffee guy.
Yeah, man. It's funny, like, because, man, I tell Michael these stories about my adventures, man, and he just, like, puts them down in this book like it's real or something, man. But it's crazy. I got to tell you, man, the reptilians are out there, and they're trying to take over the world.
So you don't mind being in a comic book?
No, man. Whatever I can do, man, to help my best friend Michael out, man. You know, we got to get the word out about these aliens. I mean, you just don't know who they are.
Okay. I think that's enough of you, sir. Appreciate it.
Yeah, Ronald's good in small doses.
Oh, that's right. Now, well, I've got to ask a couple things, though, because we talked about people, you know. There are a couple of – there's a 5:30 woman that comes in, and there's a bro jock dude comes in 11:30. Are those based on real people, too?
Those are just kind of more archetypes. Like, the 5:30 a.m. lady, she's actually based off of just a character that my wife watches on a show or something. I just was like, oh yeah. I was like, and they're just more kind of like, they're not really based off of certain people, just certain types of people, I guess.
Right. 'Cause you don't want people mad at you.
Exactly.
Okay, so the first issue now, you've basically got that in the can, as you were saying. How many issues are you going to have in the first story?
I'm sorry?
How many issues in the first story? It's not one issue, right? It doesn't conclude in the first issue.
Oh, absolutely not. We are – I have a lofty goal here. I want to do 100 issues of this book.
Wow.
Like that, and I'm one of those type of people that like sets the bar very high. I might not come anywhere close, but that's the bar that I'm going to set it at. As of right now, I am drawing issue 4. Issue 2 just finished getting colored. So we are quite a bit ahead. My, again, lofty goal is to produce these books on a quarterly schedule so you're not waiting a year for the next issue to come out.
Okay, that's cool. Now, hopefully you'll have a very successful campaign, maybe even give you a little money towards the second issue. Would be nice to see. That's always a great way to run a campaign when it turns out that way. So once again, let me say when this is going to conclude, because I think it's real important. The money has to be reached. The goal of $2,800 has to be reached by Monday, July 19 at 7:33 a.m. Eastern Daylight Time. Now, when this posts, you're only going to have about a day left to do it. So you've got to get on there right away and support InsectiKid to make sure that it happens, and all kinds of good backers and stuff. Get in there. Speaking of InsectiKid, do you have an idea what his powers are?
Yes, actually, in looking, doing all this research for him, for different insects, give me a second because I got to pull it up.
Okay. In just a minute, we'll talk about the different levels that I got a kick out of. Because I picked the Insta-Egg level because I don't have enough space to buy all the paper copies anymore. So I get digital. I got more room on my hard drive than I do on my shelf. So that's why I go ahead and support that. That's always good stuff.
Okay. Yeah, I've actually been picking up a lot of digital comics because I just love seeing what people are doing with different issues and properties. Mm-hmm. And it's the same thing. Like, it's really easy to run out of space. Mm-hmm. But based on Hakeem Hudson, AKA the InsectiKid, his powers, he has the strength of a leaf cutter ant that is able to lift 50 times its own body weight. Mm-hmm. He has the exoskeleton of an ironclad beetle. It's the hardest shell. He has the hunter abilities of a dragonfly, wings that are like super hunter skills. And dragonflies are known to get their prey 95% of the time. He has firepower of a bombardier beetle. What's really interesting about this one is that it has a fire boiling spray that it shoots out of its, let's say rear end at 212 degrees Fahrenheit.
Wow.
And I always kind of laughed about how we talk like, say, Spider-Man and the use of webbing. So where it would realistically come from. So in issue 2, we have a very funny scene of how InsectiKid comes across this particular power. Mm-hmm. And he also has, I'm going to butcher this, but they're called aphids, A-P-H-I-D-S.
Yeah, aphids, I think.
They absorb solar radiation for power. Mm-hmm. And then last but not least, the jumping comes from fleas. They can jump 150 times its own body weight.
Hmm. So are you going to explain how he gets these powers?
Yeah, there's going to be – he's not going to understand what he's actually capable. And we're going to be discovering them just as he does along the way. He's actually – introduced to someone in issue 1 that's going to kind of tell him a little bit about himself and who he is. Mm-hmm. And she is trying to teach him, and being a 17-year-old, he thinks he knows what he's talking about and he doesn't need anyone's help.
Okay. That's typical. Yep. I've known some 17-year-olds. Yep. That sounds good. So that'll be, of course, he has to learn along the way, which is probably going to be a slow process.
Oh, yeah.
Okay, so, wow, 100 issues. Wow, that'll be fun to see. Of course, that means you've got a whole rogues gallery set up for him to take on, right?
Oh, yeah, that's what it's – I've – it's weird. Like, I've gone down so many rabbit holes with some of these conspiracy theories, and with the reptilians, we're going to learn a lot about the reptilian race and what they're doing. And there's actually different factions that are going to be introduced that aren't necessarily reptilian, but they're similar in fashion.
Oh, okay. I like, because this reminds me a little bit of Star Trek Deep Space Nine. They had layers to these different societies and stuff like that, which I always liked. I like that when you have to, there's a little bit of politics involved with that. And it sounds like that's going to be here. So is not to give away anything, but I don't want to say he's always going to be fighting the reptilians, but that they're going to be foes for Insecticid for quite some time then.
Absolutely. And see, sometimes I don't know what to give away, what not to give away.
Because yeah. I'll just hint. I would say tease us. Don't spoil it.
Well, let's just say his creator or the people behind him might not have altruistic motives either. So he might be caught in between a war that he knows nothing about.
Cool. Okay, that'll be good. Of course, that's a learning process too. He's got to go and figure out what it is he's up against. So that'll be kind of fun. I like stories that sort of build over time, that you don't show all your cards right away. I talked with James Tynan IV, and he was doing a year-long Batman book, and he revealed who the big bad was at week 26, and some people fussed with him about that. And he was like, well, I'm not going to reveal him on the first week. Of course I got to, you know, you got to do some hiding and you got to do some revealing and stuff. You don't want to show everything right off the bat, because then there's no mystery involved. And I think that's what you're doing right here. You're developing a little bit of the mystery.
And that's something I've run into, like because I have the first 6 issues plotted out pretty tightly, and there's little nuggets that, like, I'm trying to let the reader know, and so I kind of battle against that too. Is like, well, should I let them know this is happening or who this person is, or should I save this for this issue? Of trying to, you know, keep the story going along and keeping everyone entertained at the same time.
Well, that's going to be something you're going to have to decide. I have a feeling you'll know best when to show a card for effect. Is there, do you run like your scripts and stuff past, you said your wife helps you on it. Might you show her some stuff and get her reaction?
Yeah, it's almost like a 3-person operation. Between my wife, Christy, and my buddy, Jordan Lowe, is I usually plot out the book in my mind of where I want to go, and I start piecing it together. And then actually, I don't write the script till I've drawn the whole book. Like, I might draw a few pages and then go back, because my wife gets a little mad that she's like, I'm coloring this and I don't know what's going on here. could you fill me in? So there are times where I'll go back and like write some stuff out and say, okay. So, but then usually I'll sit down and write the script completely out from beginning to end, sit on it for a week, go back, make some changes. And then I'll send it off to my wife for her to look over, to edit, and change anything that she thinks. And then it goes on to Jordan Lowe, and he's like the final editor, and he's the one that'll, like, when lettering, say, okay, well, you have too many words. This is no way this is going to fit. This is how we're going to do this. And I am amazed, and I'm so lucky to have these people that believe in this property so much.
Great, because I'm an editor for an indie comic as well, and my roommate is the one that did it. And what he does is he doesn't write the whole script. He writes a page at a time, and then he gives it to me, and I go through and edit you know, I get the words right. So he'll tell me, was that funny? Was that really, really funny? And there was one time I said, no, I don't think that was funny enough. He went back and rewrote it so it was much funnier and stuff. So it's good to have somebody you can bounce things off of so you can get reaction to before you actually put it out. And then everybody goes, well, we didn't get that. If you can, you know, if you got your wife and your friend to help, that is a massive step forward, I really have to say. So that's great.
And then I also have another artist, Michael Tyler, that I've known for, wow, it's possibly 15 to 20 years, mm-hmm. but we have never actually met in person. He is out in Indiana, I believe.
Mm-hmm.
And we have bounced over the years back and forth working on stuff. And we've connected in the last year or so. And he is just all in. He's actually doing the variant cover for Insecticid. One of the awards we did was it's a limited to 100 copies. And it is a homage to Todd McFarlane's Spider-Man number one that we know sold a million copies easily.
So you could do worse than to copy the best.
Yeah, correct.
Yeah, that's very good, very good. Because it's funny you say that about not being in the same room. You're more likely to be together than the people on the comic that I work on. The because I live in Florida, and of course the creator does too. And the artist lives on the top of a mountain in North Carolina. At least he used to anyway. I don't think he's there anymore. But then the colorist lives in the Philippines. And we're kind of like, you know, someday we're going to try to get everybody together in one room and actually so we can see each other because everybody's talking via the internet, which is a great thing. It's just like what you're doing. Although if that person's in Indiana, that's closer than the Philippines. So I think
just slightly.
Yeah. So you might be able to do that's great. I'm glad you got it because that makes such a big difference when you can get feedback. You know, it's somebody that understands it too. Now, I thought we would talk real briefly about the different levels. I love that it's Insecta. Every seems like just about every level has Insecta something.
I'm one thing that you'll quickly learn about me is I'm very cheesy and I love I love anything that's cheesy. Just like we might have one or two cheesy coffee puns in Insecticid one also. Mm-hmm. But I based the reward levels off of the evolution of an insect I was researching. So there's an Insecta egg and then the different stages of the insect are actually the reward tiers.
Larva, pupa, there's a hive.
We can't forget about the hive minds.
That's right. Now, the one thing one level you don't have, and whenever I talk to people, this seems to be getting popular more and more, is to get somebody who pays to have themselves drawn into the comic.
It's funny you mention that because it was an afterthought because some of I've gained a little buzz around the area and some of the guys I work with were getting super excited about this. And I was like, you know, I could like throw people in as customers that Hakeem would, you know, make coffee for. Mm-hmm. So that is something that future issues that we might explore. And I just kind of had a brain fart on this one.
Well, it's okay. You know, not everybody starts out on the same place. It's just as I interview folks, and I always say the Kickstarters, you know, look at podcasters as their best friends because it's free advertising. And so when I talk with people, that one of them I could actually afford, it's usually hundreds of dollars to get that done. And there's one that wasn't. And I said to the guy, I'm going to get that. I want to get in the book. It was it's a story about Moby Dick becoming a zombie.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, it's interesting. I think that he's from Ohio, too, I think. Matt Shore, I think, for that. But anyway, you could buy and get your face put in it. And so I sent him my picture, and I got it in there, and I didn't see it because I was a zombie, too. I didn't quite recognize it. And he pointed it out to me as, oh, there I am. And so now I have that little picture somewhere because it's kind of neat, especially if you're a longtime comic fan like I am, to see your own face. Being a zombie in a book is something special. So I would recommend it.
Especially these days, everybody wants to be a zombie. Yeah. But yeah, it is that nice little extra touch of, hey, look, that's me. I mean, that is a very cool thing to do.
Yeah, that's just something to suggest for future. And, you know, I'm expecting this one to be successful and move on to the next one. And I think this will work out real well. Now, do you know where the reptilians come from?
Yes.
Okay.
They come from a planet called Dinosauria.
Okay. That's appropriate. Okay. That's good stuff. So
speaking of that cheesiness.
Yeah. That'll be fun. This is a lot of fun. You're right about fun. That's one thing that when I was a kid, I used to just love seeing stuff. And I still to this day have moments that I cherish when I read something. I go, oh my gosh. There was one time, of course, Batman's my guy. He was in a Justice League, a JLA that Grant Morrison had written. And Batman is standing there and he's dumping a liquid around him. Now, thereafter, they had the Hyperions, I think was the name of the group. And they had Superman level powers. And he's standing there in the middle of this liquid. And all of a sudden, three of them show up around him and they say, well, we're about to grind your bones to dust. Any last words? And Batman says, a few. And he goes to outline what's going on. And it turns out that fire's a big thing. And they discovered that was gasoline that he put. And he pulls out a match. And the one of them goes, well, that's a very interesting theory, but it's too bad you never get to test it. And he lights the match and throws it into the fire. And the fire blows all over the place. And all these people are going, ah! And Batman stands there and he takes his fist and puts it in his hand and goes, ready, he goes. I remember where I was when I read it. I remember going, oh, wow. You know, because that was just, I couldn't imagine how Batman was going to survive.
Yeah.
And when he did that, I just, wow. That was one of those, I cherished that moment. That was just a great thing.
I know exactly what you're talking about because, you know, I've been collecting, I'm 43 years old and I have been collecting comics since I was probably in third or fourth grade.
Wow.
And like, I can remember right where I was when I like picked up the two issue of, it was Superman when John Byrne was doing it.
Yeah.
I think it was like 13, 14, but it had to do with a parallel universe where he goes over and meets another Supergirl, but meets three Kryptonians that have like just decimated this Earth. Mm. And he has to use gold kryptonite to basically, if I remember correctly, to kill them.
Mm-hmm.
And it was like, so like this little kid, I'm so shocked. I was like, no, like, are you serious? Like Superman doesn't kill. Like, I mean, we're talking about that to this day in other pop culture. But I can remember where I was, what I was doing at the time and being so shocked. And there's all these little moments of memories. Like, I think that's why we love pop culture so much, because it like instills these little moments and times for us.
Mm-hmm. That's the thing. I so relate to that because, like I said, that because Batman's my guy. When I saw him take on three Superman level bad guys and beat them, I remember just sitting there going, now, of course, the next issue, Superman figured out what was going on because he's always a little behind Batman when it comes to sorting these things out. But he did figure it out eventually. But, you know, that to me was the first story Grant Morrison did in the JLA. And I just, you know, I remember being floored.
Oh, and I remember, like, because I collected that too. I know exactly what you're talking about.
Mm-hmm. I love that. I just, it's because I'm a Batman guy. That's why. That's what a big deal. So anyway, maybe we'll see some moments like that in Insecticid. That would be fun to have memorable moments that everybody says, "Wow, I loved it when you did this, did that."
Well, if I've done my job correctly, they will.
Great. Now, as far as conventions and things go, have you ever had a booth at a table at a convention?
Yeah, we were doing steady conventions there for a little while, and then we kind of took a back seat and reorganized things. And then just as we were starting to ramp back up, unfortunately, the pandemic hit. So we've just been idling our time, making sure that we had plenty of content to deliver. We've done Mothman Festival a couple of times. That's a big outdoor convention up here. But we are right now we're looking at 2022 to kind of like make a big splash and start hitting a lot of the conventions again.
Cool. Because this year I know I'm going to be at AwesomeCon in DC. I'm going to be helping out my creator friend on several levels. He's going to be doing some stuff and I'm going to be helping him. I think we're going to be at New York as well. So I've got all kinds of, you know, plans for that. Not everybody's ready to get started back in the conventions right now. Of course, I'm fully vaccinated. Everybody I know basically is fully vaccinated. So I'm kind of like, you know, I think I'm ready. I believe the science. So I believe we're going to, but I fully realize that there are people who don't think now is the time to start doing that. Because I still see people wearing masks and stuff like that. And I know they've been vaccinated. And I'm going, well, okay. You know, if that makes you feel safer, all the better, you know, for that. But
oh, absolutely. Yeah. And I think I misspoke because we were set up for Mothman Festival and then they mm-hmm. postponed it. Mm-hmm. And I would have to double check. But I think they, like in September, mm-hmm. I think they rescheduled it for September. Mm. But unfortunately, my memory is not what it used to be, so I would have to double check into it. I just know that we're going to be there whenever it's happening.
Okay. Well, now, of course, that leads to the next perfect question. If we want to follow you on social media to find out like, where you're going to be and things like that, how do we do that?
You can go right to our website at soprocomics.com. It has all the books that we're doing as well as where they can be bought. Any type of conventions. You can also find us on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and just search for SoPro Comics and you should be able to find us.
Great, great. Sounds good. So how long have you been doing SoPro Comics as a company?
We have probably been doing it for probably 8 or 9 years. I think it was... Again, my memory is not the best, but it's been longer than a minute. I can tell you that.
Well, that's good. So that's why it's so pro. You've been working on it long enough that you're a pro at it. So that's good.
Absolutely.
That's good. Okay. So we've got to make sure everybody knows Insecticid, and that's all one word. Number one, it's going to conclude, get the $2,800 goal on Monday, July 19 at 7:33 a.m. Eastern Daylight Time. And as we're recording a little early, we're not there yet. Now we need you guys' help to make sure that this happens. Be sure to get in there. I have backed it and I think you should do the same. If you go to Insecticid number one on Kickstarter, I think you'll get a chance to look things over. You'll have a fun video to look at as well as some of the pages and some of the art and all the different levels and good things so you can pick out what is the best for you. And I want to see more Insecticid, so let's make sure that happens. So all I can tell you is I think you're off to a great start, Michael, and let's have lots more Insecticid. Then maybe that whole 100 issues and more would be great to see.
Absolutely, and thank you so much for having me on. I just ran into your podcast by accident on Facebook, and I started listening to them, and you do a really good job of getting the information out about some of these indie comics.
Well, I appreciate it. I don't often bump into people who have listened to the podcast. The first time I did, I was interviewing the guy and he said, you know, I listened to your podcast. I was about 250 episodes in and I said, really? I've never talked to anybody who actually listens to it before. So I always appreciate that. I appreciate you listening to it and seeking me out. So I'm sure we'll get to talk again. Maybe for the next time around, whenever you're doing something like this, let's get in touch and talk again. How about?
Sounds great.
People need dramatic examples to shake them out of apathy, and I can't do that as Bruce Wayne. As a man, from flesh and blood, I can be ignored, I can be destroyed, but as a symbol.
Get the latest from the comics universe. News, interviews, previews, and reviews. Listen to the weekly Wayne's Comics Podcast so you can keep reading your comics.
It's great to welcome to the podcast folks from Livid Comics, and that includes, let me make sure I get them in alpha order, John Durgan and Joel Van Patten. Let's start with you, John. How are you?
Good, thank you. We really appreciate you having us on here today. You know, it's a great opportunity to get on and talk about our comic that's live on Kickstarter.
I always say that podcasters are the best friend of Kickstarter people because it's free advertising.
Absolutely.
Hard to pass that up. And Joel, how about you?
Yeah, doing well, Wayne. Thanks a lot for having us on the show tonight. We're excited to be here, so thank you for the opportunity.
It's great to talk with you. Now, we got to be really clear on how this book is named because I was mixed up, but I get mixed up easily anyway. So the book is called Yule, issue one, but it's spelled J-O-L with the double dots over the O, and it's pronounced Yule. That's right?
Yes, correct. That's correct. And a lot of people think it's my name and it's not my name. So some people are like, oh, you named the book after yourself. And I'm like, no, it's not named Joel. It's Yule. So, yeah, I wanted like a Scandinavian name that actually kind of works around Christmas. So it's like Yule, Yule log, Yuletide. If you think of that, that's kind of how a good way to remember it.
And the reason why we're going into that is because the book has to do with Christmas. And let me read a little bit of the description on the Kickstarter page. It says, as a child, did you ever wish you could go to the North Pole and meet Santa and see his workshop? 8-year-old Will Sheldon is about to have that wish come true, kind of. While Christmas shopping for his dad, Will comes across a mysterious cube in the back of an antique junk shop that catches his eye and costs only $1. Boy, that's there's trouble there. What he doesn't know is that this simple purchase will trigger a chain of events that would change the world as we know it. And so this is great. So, well, let's see. Who's the best one to ask where the idea came from? Is that John?
Yeah. I am the writer. And so I have a 7-year-old son named Will, like I was saying off air, and named the character after my kid there. So one night around Christmas time, it was a couple years back, he told me he liked Halloween more than Christmas because he liked that it was scary and Christmas wasn't. So I started trying to think of ideas to be themed around Christmas, but you know, still have a creepy atmosphere to it. Something that hadn't been done, you know, like Krampus or, you know, something like along that lines. I mean, Scrooge, obviously, mm-hmm. you know, can be creepy in its own way. But so I started thinking, you know, what if a kid around my son's age got trapped at the North Pole, but it was on the outskirts, you know, not all warm and fuzzy, and there was evil lurking in the woods. That's where the concept started. From there, you know, Joel and I started talking about doing a comic book, and I pitched the idea to him as far as what I had been starting to write. And I was going to do it as a novel initially. So we started talking about doing it as a comic series, and we expanded the story significantly from there. It's going to have, you know, time travel. It's going to have hopping different dimensions, alternate history. You know, it's going to have quite the mixed bag in there. So, but the initial concept was that conversation with my son. And I still remember sitting there in his bed talking to him. It was Christmas night, actually. And I remember immediately trying to come up with ideas in my head while I was sitting there putting him to bed. And that's where it all started.
Oh, cool. Because it's really interesting. Of course, we're recording this in July. And of course, you know, a lot of people consider Christmas in July because July 25th is like 6 months from December 25th. And so that's considered the time. So this is a good time to do Christmas stuff. And people scold me because I don't get to this as fast as I should. The Yule issue number one Kickstarter is underway right now and is going to conclude on Wednesday, July 21st at 10 a.m. Eastern Daylight Time. Oh, you don't know how many people retch at me if I wait till the end of the episode. Why did you wait so long? So we're going to get that out there and make sure that happens in there. So it's good to do. Now, Joel, okay, so we've got where the basic came from. How did you decide the art style and what the characters look like?
Yeah, that was a bit challenging, you know, to take over a brand new book with non-established characters. It wasn't like I took over for Spider-Man or something like that, where we all know how he looks. So I literally have, you know, notebooks and pages of sketches of just what does his face look like and trying to figure this out and, you know, finally nailing something. And what happens too in the comic art world is sometimes a character will need what we call a singularity. So it needs some type of defining look so you know it's that character. So Will has his big hair flop in the front. That's kind of his definitive style that he's got going on there. Just looking at it overall, my background for the last 10 years, I've been working in fine art with oil painting. I did have a sequential background in my youth. I was actually going to go to Savannah College of Art and Design for sequential art. Kind of passed on that and started a business in the automotive world instead. So the idea was ideally to try to merge the two between sequential art, but also kind of have a painterly element to some of the coloring and images in there. The dream eventually would be to do maybe a full book in analog oil paint, if time ever allowed to do that. That was something that we have on our radar, maybe, you know, like Alex Ross kind of style or something fun like that.
Hmm. Cool. Now, how many chapters are in this book? The story?
Well, so this story arc is going to be 5 issues. But, you know, the world of Yules is much bigger than that. We've already talked about branching off for different storylines. And, you know, there's some characters in future issues that really could have their own series. So, but this particular story is going to be 5 issues.
Cool. Now, one of the things it says on the Kickstarter page, it says issue 1 is fully completed and currently at your printer. Wow. Congratulations. That's great.
Yeah, thanks. Yeah, that's fun.
We actually have some promo copies in hand, so we had a small batch sent to us to check for any errors and whatnot. So it's I drove. It went to Joel's house. I was like, I'm driving there the first chance I get. I wanted a copy in my hand. So,
is this your first guy? Your first comic?
Yes.
Okay, because
for both of us. Yeah. For both.
Oh, really? Oh, cool. Because, you know, I'm an editor for Indie Comics, and my roommate did a book, and I was editing, and the first time he saw the first character that was drawn in a way that we liked it, he just was like running around the room going, oh, my gosh, oh, my gosh. And it's that first one is just something that something really special. So I'm glad that you guys get to do that and make that, and we've already gotten to that point. So now it'll move on. But there's something else we got to talk about, and the fact that you've had $1,000 goal and you have passed that goal already. So what that means is on Wednesday, July the 21st at 10 a.m., you are going to get the amount of money that has at that time. And we're recording a little early. You're almost at $3,000 as we're recording. So come on, guys. This is the time to get in and really jump on board and help make this thing happen. You know, I always talk about the daily heart attack in Kickstarters. People go on and refresh, and in the last 5 minutes, nobody knew has pledged. And you go, oh, no, it's over. That's the end. I'm not getting any more. And luckily for you guys, you don't have to have that every day. That's a good thing.
We still hit refresh plenty, though. Don't get me wrong there. We set the goal low intentionally because the book was done already. You know, we wanted to make sure that we had money towards the printing costs, you know, and really help Livid Comics overall for future issues, right? So a lot of what we're going to be using funding on is the rewards for the Kickstarter, which we, you know, also the customized bags and backing boards and so forth. You know, we try to go above and beyond with everything. So it's not standard paper on the comic book. It's, you know, it's not standard backing boards. It's customized bags, you know, so we really wanted it to feel special.
Cool. That's great stuff. I love it when a book goes the extra mile to make it really interesting and enjoyable for those kinds of things. Now, I've got to ask, of course, Livid Comics. Did you create Livid Comics to make the book, or did you have Livid Comics before the started on the book? Is that Joel? Should I ask Joel on that one? I'd like to alternate
Joel can
people.
Yeah, sure.
Yeah, I think it was we just needed something to release it underneath that title. So I guess to answer your question, Livid came because of Yule, and then Yule became because of Livid. So The idea with it too is we wanted to not just use it to promote and publish our own books, but also, you know, have the capacity to help other artists, other writers who may need a help, you know, with printing cost or getting it out to people or marketing or setting up a Kickstarter campaign. And, you know, if we can connect with them and help them in any way, that was also part of what we wanted Libid to be. And also to help with distribution in the New England area, because it's really lacking up here in terms of what we can find for indie titles, you know, at our local comic book store. So that was one of the main goals with Libid, was not just to do our own thing, but also help other people get over that hurdle to release their own books as well.
That's interesting, because I guess because you guys are closer to New York City, everybody kind of figures the folks there handle that stuff.
Yeah, we're so, like Boston's an hour and a half away or so. So we're up by Boston area, north of Boston.
See, what's really interesting to me is I moved from around Washington, D.C. area to Florida, and I was stunned when I got here how many comics creating companies there were in Florida. I kind of thought, you know, this far from New York, nobody's going to be thinking comics, but there's like all these different companies down here and it's just all over the state, and I'm always interested in that and see where the companies come from because you know, it used to be in the old days, if it wasn't D.C. or Marvel or Image, it didn't happen, but now thanks to Kickstarter and things like that, we get all those good things going on. So I'm real pleased to hear that. Every time I hear a new company, I go, "That's good. That's a good right. thing."
Yeah, like Florida, to your point, yeah, it definitely seems like there's a ton down there right now. So it's like a hot spot, you know. And we're kind of, you know, has some little bit of old school things up here. Like 40 miles down the road, you know, Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles were made in Mirage Studios. So that's local. New England Comics is another local with the Tick, right? And those guys. So there's some good. At the time, they were indie publishers, but now they're big time. So, you know, we kind of grew up in that world too up here.
It intrigues me when I get to go to conventions in different parts of the country. I'm always looking around to see what the climate is like as far as comics companies go. And I went to Ohio. They had a con, I forget the name of it, Top Space, I think it was called. I forget what the space stands for, but it was like independent books. And there were a ton of comic companies in that area around Cincinnati or Cleveland. There's a bunches of them, and I'm always interested. I guess it's because the technology has made it such that we can actually do these kinds of things. We don't have to be near huge printing presses to make those things happen. You can have a local printer that can do it, which is just great. And that's great. Now, let's get back to the story, because I want to talk a little bit more. I'm going to read a little bit more off of the Kickstarter page, because it has something to do with how the story goes. Known in other realms as the Kasi. Did I get that right? I'm always worried about pronouncing. Okay. The long-dormant cube teleports Will to an unknown dimension between his home and the true North Pole. Will wakes up in a snowy forest in an unfamiliar land. Terrified, he starts his trek across the dangerous terrain. But something ghastly lurks in the surrounding woods, waiting for the chance to feast upon him, or at least stop Will dead in his tracks. Is that going to be something that we've heard of before, or is that something new you guys have come up with?
Completely new. Okay, it's, yeah. Joel made some pretty cool. As you'll see on the initial cover, we tried to keep stuff hidden. You know, you just see these claws coming out at him. But as we've done some of these shows, and you know, people have seen some of the pages, people have gotten a glimpse at these creatures that we're referring to there. But that's all Joel's creation right there.
Oh, cool. Very cool. Because, you know, the Christmas legends and stuff like that, I'm always, you know, we talked a little bit before we started to record about like Krampus and things like that. I'm a big Krampus fan, the Anti-Claus, as I call him. And I always like to, when there's new legends that come along and they take off, you know, because Krampus to me is one of those great things that I didn't know about it. I mean, it's been around for centuries, and yet now, finally, we're starting to get comics about Krampus, and there's movies coming out about Krampus and stuff like that. So maybe you guys, if this thing takes off, you might have movie deals and stuff in your future. You never know.
That's the dream right there. We talk about that, you know, we've talked about that quite a bit. That's obviously far down the line. We're on our first issue, but I absolutely could see it. You know, the whole concept and story and the characters we've created and the backstories and just the cool look that, you know, Joel is putting on paper with them. It just, it all has opportunity written all over it.
Boy, because Netflix, I mean, all these channels have 24 hours a day programming going on, and they need something to fill all that time, particularly when you get around the holidays. And that's something that we should talk a little bit about that, because I always tell the story of Grant Morrison and Klaus, I think he called it, K-L-A-U-S. It's the first issue of the first series came out in December. And I think I was the only one in May buying the last issue in that series. I thought, this is not the time to put a Christmas book out in the middle of May. So I was kind of like, so I noticed on the Kickstarter page that this is coming out. When is the book? When are you going to start distributing it?
So we were telling everyone, we actually had a lot of friends, family, Joel's fine art fans, you know, backing us before Kickstarter even started. You know, this is back in January, February, people were ready to support us. We were telling people, you know, late April, early May was the goal. The book was done in early May, but there's massive printing delays with the COVID stuff going on. Mm. So the 10 promo copies we had sent to us, we were initially told 7 to 10 days, then it turned into 2 to 3 weeks. We didn't get them for 45 days. And now we're waiting on the large order to come in for stuff. So that's why it's delayed. It's not due to production. It's been done. Joel's halfway done book two even. So it's,
wow.
Yeah.
But the good news is this may have worked to your benefit. If you start distributing it around, say, November, this might be an ideal time to put a Christmas book out, because that's when people start buying holiday stuff.
Well, the thing, too, though, I mean, our initial goal was to have all five done by then, so we could put out a nice graphic novel of all five issues together for the holidays. But with the printing delays, it's seeming more and more unlikely. But we at least want a couple of them. We're going to be at a Comic Con here in New Hampshire, the Granite Con in Manchester, New Hampshire, in September. Mm-hmm. We want Yule 1 and Yule 2 on our table. So so hopefully we at least have three of the books out by Christmas even, so that we could even maybe put those together.
Are you going to collect it when it's all done?
Absolutely.
Okay, so that'd be good, because I like, it just depends on the story and stuff. Unfortunately, I have a stack as tall as me of stuff that I have to read, and so I'm behind on that. But the good stuff, I still want to get a good hardcover or a collected edition, so that especially when it comes around Christmas, because I am a big Christmas guy. I got to tell you, I love holiday music. I love holiday stuff. I'm not much on holiday movies. Romance stuff doesn't get me, because it's a 50-50 shot. They get together, they don't. So I find that a little boring. But I love the holiday music. Even in the middle of the summer, I'm still looking for holiday music to buy and stuff like that. So right away, you've got my attention with the Christmas story. Even in the middle of July, I said, Christmas, July, all right. Let's have at that. I think that's a great thing. So the good news is that I think that will do really well. You know, the old, because when I lived in the Washington, D.C. area, the radio station up there that played pop music, on July the 25th, they would always run Christmas music all day. And of course, I'd be listening to it all day, because that's what I want to hear. I like to hear that stuff. So for me, I have you guys thought about, like, music that might go with this comic?
That's a good question. I don't know if you had a chance to check out the trailer or not, but I mean, we had someone make the trailer for us, and we had a Christmas song go into, you know, some creepy, horror sounding, music there. So, and Joel actually had talked with someone about potentially writing some music for it as well, for the trailer. But I'm seeing some of these Kickstarters out there where they'll have like a soundtrack.
Yes.
That's something that we haven't really explored much yet, but I think that would be pretty cool, especially since we were looking to hire someone to make some music anyways. So,
because there are some book companies that will make, you can buy the soundtrack as well as the stuff, because they'll often, like you said, with your video, they will put out, they'll develop a soundtrack basically for when you're reading the book, and that's one of the levels will be the soundtrack. And I often buy that because I'm interested in music and stuff. And I always hearken back to Nexus when they had those black and white issues, the first three, and the third one had a, what they call a flexi disc in it. And Mike Baron and Steve Rude had actually put together an audio play of the third book. And I listened to it, and I until I wore that disc out, because I thought that was such a cool thing. Yeah. And nobody else has done it that I know of since then. But I think that's especially in the holiday time. Oh my, I think that would go big. I think that this would really work well for you. So I think that would be a great thing. So, how many pages are in the first issue?
22 pages for issue one.
Okay, and is that going to be consistent from issue to issue?
It's a minimum. Yeah, we might have some longer issues. Issue two is already scripted. Like I said, Joel's working on that. That's, you know, right now is supposed to be 22 pages, but we could easily turn that into more if we find, you know, after looking through editing and so forth, that it makes more sense there to add to it. But that was the thought, 22 pages for all five issues. And see where things go, but we definitely don't want to skimp on the details. So if we have to do 30 plus pages, whatnot, we'll do it.
Now, well, I have to ask at this point, because I think it's important for people to know, including me, if I like a Christmas story, are you going to Kickstarter each issue?
I don't know, Joel, wouldn't you think at least the thought now is we'll see how much backing we get as we go, support without Kickstarter. It's a lot of work doing a Kickstarter, as you probably know, setting it all up, promoting, talking to so many people. And we'll see. I mean, I think we probably will, but we also have other titles in the works too. So we don't want to be, having multiple Kickstarters running at once, and we're having to worry about all that.
I don't think you can.
Yeah, exactly.
Kickstarter won't let you until you fulfill. I think if you do one, you have to fulfill that one before they'll let you start another one.
Mm-hmm.
Is my understanding of it. And of course, I just think that I always say that I'm so grateful for Kickstarter, and I wish it had been around sooner, because I always worry about the stories that we didn't get to see because Kickstarter wasn't there. DC or Marvel wouldn't pick them up, and all those stories just never happened for us because there wasn't Kickstarter to do it. So
yeah, I think a lot of the Kickstarter now is for marketing too, right? So it's not even just necessarily funding, but it's getting new eyes on your product. There's some big names coming in there. I mean, we've seen some things recently with what, Todd McFarlane's done, what Keanu Reeves, Berserker's done. Like, there's some big names, big money coming in to that scene too. So that's something that might have to think about if you're an independent publisher is using it, for marketing too, just to get your book in front of new eyes as part of it too, whether or not your campaign's successful or not. That's something to consider.
Somebody told me that the Berserker number one Kickstarter was the biggest all-time comic book Kickstarter.
Yeah, it was 1.4 million last I checked. I bought it at the local comic shop. I didn't buy it on Kickstarter, but I have it, and it's a good book. I really like the art. If it has kind of a colorized old school Frank Miller Sin City kind of feel to it. So I'm a big Frank Miller fan. So kind of has that feel to it.
Very cool. Because, the comic industry doesn't know what it wants to be when it grows up, to be honest. And I'm anxious to see where it goes. Everybody says, is it going to be digital? Is it going to be print? Is the print going to at some point stop? And it's just going to go completely digital. On every Wednesday, will we go to an FTP site and download the digital instead of going to and buying the paper copies and stuff like that? I don't ever see that happening.
Me neither.
To be frank.
Yeah, I don't
because
either.
Because too many people enjoy the paper, the experience of holding it in your hands and reading it and turning the pages and stuff like that. But I don't know. I'm always reminded of a guy who runs a comic company, and I won't say who it is, just I don't want to embarrass him. But his daughter was there, and his daughter had learned how to read on an iPad. And so he said, well, hey, how would you like to read this comic that I was involved with? And he laid it in front of her. And what she did every time it was time to turn a page, she put her finger on it and like it was an iPad. And of course, he was kind of panicking because, the condition was going right down the toilet as she did that. But he said, next time I'm going to make sure you get the digital version. He said to her. It was kind of, yeah. But there's,
I like to hang them on the wall in the studio too, right? So you get something nice. Maybe it's slabbed or maybe it's just bagged. And they're kind of my buddies in the studio with me, honestly. Like, I like looking at those guys, the characters, the artists are kind of with me. So it creates a homey feel in the studio. So I line the walls with the books like every fan does, right? So you couldn't get that with the digital, obviously, unless you printed it off or something, but I don't think it would be the same.
Well, and I've got to ask you, as the artist, I'm always interested in this topic. Do you use paper? Do you draw on the paper, or do you use computers and then print it out? How do you create the art?
So for Livid and Yule, right now I'm fully digital. I do have that old romantic, you know, old school style in me that I do like to get my hands dirty. I do like working with bristle board and inks and all that type of stuff. So just for terms of productivity and speed right now, it's fully digital. But sometimes I think about that too. I'm like, man, if I ever died, like there's so many drawings that are going to be locked in my iPad that no one's ever going to be able to see. So there's something about that too, right? You know, like I said earlier on the show, I might, you know, eventually do something that's fully analog, which would be, you know, canvases. I mean, you're talking 24 inch by 36 inch per page just to get the size out, you know, and do that by 30 of them. So you have 30 canvases kicking around the studio. But yeah, to answer your question, just currently I'm just doing a digital, but I do like that old style. And that might be something, if we get time, that I would absolutely be open to going back to doing something fully analog.
Because the reason I ask that is whenever I've talked to an artist, I ask that question. And the ones that do it paper, if they run short and they need a little extra money, they'll sell those pages, like the cover or certain pages that people want and stuff like that. That'd be a little extra income for them. If you do it on the computer, you could print out a million of them and nobody really wants them because it's the computer.
Unless you did like those like NTFs now, right? You can do something like that where they have the fun tokens, I guess. I don't know much about it, but like they digitize an art image. So that might be something worth exploring too. I don't know much about it, but I have seen some art selling like a digital token, which is kind of an interesting thing too.
Yeah, what they do with that is they serialize it. They put a number on it, so it's a limited number digital version. So, and it's blowing up. You know, the NBA is doing it. They're selling NTF moments, and it's this huge trading market. It's like the trading cards for the next generation. So it's interesting to see if that'll continue blowing up or not. I don't know. I like a physical thing in my hand, but
yeah, because there's a lot of people who like to buy the art. They want to have those, particularly if they're into the, let's say Livid takes off and you guys are well known. And there are some people saying the very first book you did was Yule, and I'd like to have the cover of that. And there's a lot of people who like that kind of thing, and they spend a lot of money on those things, as I see. And I always tell people who only do digital, you might think about covers, doing them on paper, just so that little extra income that pushes you along comes on. Of course, with your Kickstarter doing this well, you may not have to worry about that so much. And as we're recording this a little early, I would love to see this really make it so that you didn't have to do another Kickstarter. You could just do the both issues with this much money. So it would be a great thing to see. But, you know, real life gets in the way of that kind of stuff, though. So that's the bad news with that. I've got to ask a thing or two, because being a Christmas guy, he's at the North Pole, and we know there's antagonist, shall we say. We won't get any more on that. Are we going to see other Christmas related things, like maybe Santa Claus or elves or things like that?
Absolutely, yeah. You know, not to give too much away, right? But the protagonist is Will, but he has some help from an elf named Einar, which his backstory is pretty cool. And the main villain is a half elf named Ragnar, and his backstory is awesome. I can't wait to tell that in future issues, but he's a very powerful, you know, half elf, and he wants that Kasi, you know? So that's the big story here is he's coming for this thing, and Will needs to get this thing to safety. And this device, I don't, recall, I don't think we said this on air here, but the device that Will gets, the Kasi, is what Santa Claus used to use to suspend time so he could deliver gifts around the world in a single night.
Oh.
So you don't know in issue one, like, why is this thing sitting in an antique shop if Santa Claus used it, right? But right. There's a whole backstory to that in future issues. Issue one is really him getting this device, accidentally triggering it, getting teleported, you know, to this dimension between his home and the North Pole, and mm-hmm. and getting the story kicking off here. So it's pretty action packed. There's not too much dialogue in issue one. You know, half the book is you know, a chase scene. You know, so it's suspenseful. There's not too much talking through it, and that's by design. Yeah. Book two, moving forward, there's a lot more dialogue because we want to tell the backstories to the Kasi, to the villain, to the Einar, the protagonist elf there. And you'll see on our Kickstarter, there's an image, which is the trade card that we made, or I shouldn't say we made, Joel did all the work on that, that actually shows characters throughout the series that you don't even see in book one. So a little bit of a spoiler there on the trade card.
Oh, cool. Because I like it when you get some extra information out of the Kickstarter page and stuff like that. Yeah, I do see this thing with the Kasi and the sea. Obviously, that's Will in the middle. Looks like painted. That must be the half-elf, of course. Now, of course, I have to know what the other half is. I guess I have to read the book to find that out, is what I'll have to do.
Yeah, we won't find that out in book one. Book two probably won't go into – it's not going into his backstory per se. So it's really book three where it's going to dive in. At least the plan is to dive into Ragnar's backstory, why he wants this thing, who he is. I use the comparison to Harry Potter a lot, as far as I view him like Voldemort, if you've followed Harry Potter at all, where everyone knows him, everyone fears him, but you really don't even see him for the first few books, you know, or movies. If people watch the movies, you just hear of him and see like little flashes of him. And that's kind of the model we wanted to go with him. Santa Claus is definitely part of this whole thing. When Joel was making this card, he asked if we should have him on it, and I said I didn't think it was a good idea. I just didn't want it to take too much away from the other characters, you know. But he's definitely part of the whole story.
Well, that's good, because Santa, of course, is the gift giver, and as such, kids are always interested in him and all those kinds of things. So that'll be interesting to see how. Of course, I'll be curious to see how Joel portrays Santa when the time comes. Because there are multitude of versions of him, you know, I particularly like the older ones where he's not in the red and white outfit, but he's in some of them, he's wearing green. And I'm always kind of like, that's interesting. I haven't seen Santa wearing green before. So I'm just kind of curious, because I don't want Joel to spoil that. I want to be able to read that when the time comes. I'd rather not find out ahead of time.
Yeah. I'll just say I'm a big fan of like the Icelandic Yule lads, if you ever Google them. So like these mischievous elven gnome type of creatures that show up on, it's like the 12 days of Christmas with like these prankster Yule lads that show up and do different pranks and tricks to people. So if you Google those images, that's kind of what's in my mind. So just to tease you a little bit, that might be somewhat along the lines of what he might actually look like.
Cool. Very cool. Now, one of the things that you do that I always enjoy, and I actually did once, I could afford it one time, is the $750 goal, appear in an upcoming issue of Yule. Have you ever wanted to be in a comic book? Well, now you can. I enjoyed that. I actually was in a book about Moby Dick as a zombie.
Oh, nice. There you go.
And I'm in there as one of the characters. And in there. And of course, when I looked at the book, I didn't quite recognize it because I was a zombie. And I had to go to the guy who did it. I said, which one am I? And he pointed it out. And of course, now I just, oh, yes, I'm in a comic. I love it. And I have to say that if you ever get a chance to do that, especially if you're a comic fan, boy, that I highly recommend doing that. That is, it's as a comic fan, there's nothing better than seeing your face in a comic, because you know my whole life I've wanted that. Now I'm in there, so
that's awesome.
I recommend that. Get to do that. Of course, you know, you'll get a picture, I'm sure, of the person, and then be able to draw that person in. And we won't ask where, because that's something, you know, that'd be the nice surprise. Let's go. Good. Yeah. And there's
Yeah, I was going to say, on that, you're in the issue. I think it's not even necessarily going to be limited to necessarily a panel or a page. It could be several panels in a few pages. I'm not sure. So we'd have to go with what the story allows. So that's kind of a cool reward, right? So it might just be one panel. A lot of times that's the case. But this might actually be – you might be in the book quite a bit. So we'll see what happens with that when the way John writes that out and where we go with it.
So you could be a recurring character.
Perhaps. Yeah. That's a possibility for sure.
You could be Krampus.
If you got the look, we'll do it.
So. That'll be fun. I was saying you've got all these other good little goodies in there. You've got your Livid Comics t-shirt, the trucker hat, the hand-drawn signed Yule theme sketch signed by you, stickers, limited signed edition number one. See, all that stuff is good stuff, all worth having. I love to get those kinds of things. I have not yet backed this. That's something when we get done talking, I'm going to get in there and back it so I can decide which one, number one I can afford, and number two I really want. And we'll do that because I just think these kinds of things, especially if it's Christmas, boy, I'm going to have a tough time picking that. That's good stuff. So
we appreciate it.
Because it's great to do those things. And I'll probably get a digital because, as I said, I have a stack as tall as me, and I just – I don't know when I'm going to get to read them all, but I tend to get a digital because I have more room on my hard drive than I do in my shelves. So I'll have to do that. But it just looks like it's great stuff. And I love the painted look, by the way, Joel. I think that is a great choice.
Appreciate that. Yeah, it takes a lot of time, but I think at the end of the day, it's worth it. You know, I just have to figure out how to make it faster because we're trying to get the book out quickly. So, but I you know, if my name's on it, I want it to be a certain quality too, right? I mean, I appreciate the simplicity of just a black and white book. I'm actually an old golden era like EC horror comics fan. So that's kind of hopefully some of my Jack Davis, you know, Wally Wood, Johnny Craig stuff comes through a little bit in it because I love those guys. And man, that art is killer. And it's just simplistic black and white stuff with four color, you know, awesome.
And love of course, it. the painted feel is perfect for Christmas. I mean, if you ever look at Christmas cards and stuff, almost all of them are painted. So it's just ideal. I mean, you couldn't have, you know, that may be your style of choice, but boy, it couldn't be better applied than in a Christmas story. That's just absolutely perfect.
For Norman Rockwell meets horror, right? So that's kind of.
Norman Rockwell, as we're going.
It's dark side.
The dark side of Christmas. Yeah, we don't like that. Well, let's. I think based on the fact that you are already past your goal, I think that it's a safe bet that this one not only is going to do well, but let's hope that you'll get to do maybe a second issue, you know, pretty quickly. And you're working on that. After you get this story done in the Yule, you said there are other stories you want to tell in the Yule universe. More Christmas or maybe other holidays?
Well, I mean, right now, the characters that we're talking about using, you know, a lot of that would be Christmas side of things still. Although there is a henchman that works with Ragnar, which he's on that trade card there on the top right, I believe. I don't have it in front of me. He's got like the horns. But he's got a really cool backstory. And we like the idea of a story based around his species too, you know, so that obviously wouldn't necessarily be Christmas based. But even a lot of the other comic books or stories that I have in my head, I can find a way to tie it to the Kasi and almost make it like our own universe. You know, I don't want to obviously do it just to do it. It needs to make sense. But, you know, I have other stories that I have started jotting down outlines for where I'm debating on tying it all into this big universe together. So I think it'd be pretty cool.
Well, it looks great. And I mean, you know, the success that you're having so far, and hopefully by the time this, this post, you are much farther along and, you know, doing much better, even though you're doing very well right now. I'd love to see this kind of take off and do some kind of stuff. Cause I just, you know, you were talking about the horror stories. They used to, back in the 1800s, tell horror stories as part of Christmas. You know, The Night Before Christmas or whatever, those kinds of books, and the one that Dickens wrote, they'd have horror stories going on in them. And so they were always doing that kind of stuff. And I was always kind of like, you know, I actually sat down one time and I read Christmas Carol. And I was surprised how many things get left out of that book. At one point, for example, Christmas Present, the Ghost of Christmas Present takes the main character to a ship in the middle of the ocean. And it's Christmas Eve, and they are celebrating Christmas on the ship. And, of course, they're dancing and doing all kinds of stuff because it's just them. And I thought, gee, I'd never heard of that before, but it's in the book. And I was thinking, man, somebody should do a Christmas Carol, the left out stuff, because there's a lot of interesting stuff on there. And so I just think there's a lot of Christmas stories that have yet to be told. And, you know, like the Elf on the Shelf, you know, nobody heard of that before 5 years ago. And those things take off, and boy, stand back. So that could be good stuff for you guys. I really hope it takes off, because I don't think we have yet begun to get to the depths of what good holiday storytelling could go on. I think you guys have come up with a great story that really will, I think, enchant people, not only kids.
Yeah, there's a little bit of morality story behind this too. So one thing that Will has to overcome is his anger issue, because the Kasi actually works off of emotion. So little kids with rage or being frustrated with things, he has to learn to control that in order to successfully navigate the Kasi through time and dimension. So we have an underlying theme story there. To your point, kind of ties back to the morality tale of like Christmas Carol and things like that also.
Great. Right. It's going to be great. Again, it's Yule issue 1, and it's spelled J-O with the double dots over it, L, issue 1. And again, it's going to conclude on Wednesday, July 21 at 10 a.m. Eastern Daylight Time. Don't wait until then. Just because they've gotten their goal, that's not the time to give up. That's the time to jump on, because all these lovely stretch goals and things will just do wonderful things and help these guys do more of it, because it just seems like a really enchanting holiday story. And in the middle of July, I like it when it's 110 degrees outside. Yep. I want to hear a Christmas story. I used to always read winter books in the middle of summer to try to cool down. So this is a great time to do it. So are there other projects? You said that there are some other things that the Livid Comics is going to be up to. Is there anything you can tell us now, or do we need to wait for that?
No, we absolutely can. We started teasing it on social media. So Joel is around halfway through issue 2 of Yule, but we also have started another series called Deadball, which the protagonist is a baseball player that plays during the Deadball era, the 1910 range, and his career gets cut short to a gruesome injury. It's a deal with the devil sort of situation. So he ends up making this deal to get healed for return favor in the future, and it's going to involve carnies. The leader of the carnival is a supernatural cult leader who is the magician of the carnival. He runs the carnival, and it's gonna be a lot darker than Yule. I say Yule is a horror story, but it's a family horror story. There's no gore, there's no profanity or anything like that. Deadball is going to be a lot darker, more adult themed horror. So,
You keep hitting on the my soft spot. So, the baseball is another thing. Have you ever watched Field of Dreams?
Absolutely.
I have a twin brother, and I watched the movie first. And of course, my dad had passed when I went and saw Field of Dreams. And when the father stands up and he takes the mask off, I almost hyperventilated, because, you know, I related that character with my father, and I was just like, the tears started to roll, and, you know, and then it ends up with all the cars are coming and stuff like that. And I just, every time if I want to, you know, you get in the mood for having a good cry, I want to watch Field of Dreams, because that just gets me.
Yeah, absolutely.
So that baseball story, because that's the thing there's something magical about baseball too, that would really go well.
Yeah, and John, that concept. Oh, sorry, Joel. What were you gonna say?
No, that's okay. John and I are big baseball fans too. Outside of this, so John does the fantasy baseball, and I follow the Red Sox religiously up here in New England. So, yeah, it's just kind of a natural course. And John had originally wrote Deadball as the modern era, and I said, well, let's talk about this that 1910s, because I like that look, that image, what was going on in the world. You know, and all that stuff. And I think the title just works perfectly, right? For Deadball era. It's kind of got a horror name to it, kind of, in a way. So It was great. So we get to explore that. And we're working with a Brazilian artist named Rogério Rios is going to be doing the art for that book. And I'm hopping on to do the color work in there, too. And also the lettering for Deadball.
Wow. So you guys are up to great stuff. It sounds like really good. If people want to follow you and keep up with your stuff, how do they do that? Do you have like a website? Do you have social media?
You want to run with that, Joel? You got all that there?
I don't know if you had the new link, John, if you wanted to run the new link. You had that one?
Well, yeah, I made a link tree today, so I feel accomplished. I don't know if giving that link out works better or what, but for now, I'll give. So our Facebook group, which is growing every day, is just facebook.com/LividComics. Facebook.com/LividComics. We post a lot of stuff there. We have a YouTube channel, which we're starting to add more to. We actually did our first podcast last night. And so if you search Livid Comics on YouTube, you'll find us there. So you can subscribe there. Our Twitter handle is, at Livid Comic. So there's no S on the end of it. So at Livid Comic. And then our Instagram, Joel runs that, so I always butcher that. So I don't know if you have that handy, Joel.
Yeah, I'll hop in. It's Livid_comics is Instagram. So I'm primarily up on the Instagram stuff, doing my nonsense on there. So yeah, see me on there.
That's the art website, because I've tried to go up there, but I'm not an artist. And so I'm like, well, you have to take pictures and photographs and stuff like that. That's not my strength. So I put stuff out there when I have a new episode going. I'll put it up there. But other than that, I just don't. So one last time here, let's make sure people get it. It's Yule, and that's spelled J-O with the double dot above it, L, issue one. That's number one, too, by the way. And this project will fund on Wednesday, July 21st at 10 a.m. Eastern Daylight Time. They're past the goal, but, man, now's the time to jump on and really make things, and to really book and make this stuff happen. And a good Christmas story, I just know there's a big market out there, because I'm in there for the Christmas stories for this. So, Joel and John, you're doing wonderful stuff. I can't wait to see what else you've got coming down the pike here. And we'll have to talk again when things come along. And they'll have to let me know how that convention goes in September, because I'm interested in how cons are coming together, too. So I think that's great. So Livid Comics, I think we're going to hear a lot about you guys in the coming months ahead.
Yeah, thanks for having us back on here, Wayne. We really appreciate the opportunity to share with you tonight and your listeners as well. So thank you to everybody in the community. Everybody's been great. In the indie comic world, we can't say enough good things about everybody and our backers already and people that will back us. I mean, super humble and super grateful for everybody and everything that they've done so far.
Absolutely.
That's it for this episode. Be back next time. I'll have another great interview with an excellent comics creator, something I'm sure you won't want to miss. But until then, keep reading your comics.